Good morning. If you want to come on in, we'll get started. As you know, as we progress through the week and get near the end of the week, every moment seems to become more precious. Probably many of you have this chart. It's entitled The Kingdom of Men, Christadelphian Teaching Since 1848. And I believe it's very well laid out. We have, of course, Nebuchadnezzar's image here. We've detailed. We know, of course, that it reflects all of the other phases and facets of the beast system. And we're going to get a little deeper into that today. Ultimately, it will manifest itself perfectly or completely in the scarlet-colored beast. And we'll see the activities of the scarlet-colored beast and the dragon. And that's preparing now for these final days when Christ will return to contend directly with them. We also see Daniel 7 and the fourth beast. We see as well the information that's revealed in Daniel 8 concerning the ram and the he-goat, the Grecian Empire, and after Alexander the Great's death, we see it divided into four kingdoms, which is also illustrated here in the four heads of the winged leopard, the four wings denoting the directions of the compass, which we know came into play with the four kingdoms. And then, of course, the Seleucid and the Ptolemaic becoming the king of the north and the king of the south. And this is where we're going to be spending our time today. We talked about the great red dragon yesterday and the casting out of paganism from the political heavens. And today, we're going to be talking about the beast of the sea phase. This chart we saw yesterday, actually, in another chart very similar to it. But you'll note here that each of the three beasts of Revelation 13 are shown, plus the image. And it's apparent here that they continue on historically at the same time. And this is the reason it's portrayed like it is in this chart. That they continue historically at the same time. The beast of the sea becomes the scarlet-colored beast of Revelation 17 in our time, as we've already alluded to this morning. And the added box in the lower left corner suggests the identity of the three figures in Revelation 16:13. The dragon, and of course we know that the dragon, the great red dragon, was cast out of the political heavens, as we discussed yesterday. But the dragon itself continues to exist in a new form. And Constantine became that dragon as the ruler in Constantinople. The beast, and then the false prophet, who of course we believe is the papacy. And we'll have a chance, Lord willing, in our last class, to talk about this gathering to Armageddon and what's transpiring even now with the nations, the companions of Gog. The dragon, we know, is the political secular power in Istanbul, or Constantinople, will be in Istanbul at the return of Christ, and that is Russia. The beast, the religious power, which is, of course, Roman Catholicism, centered in Europe. And the false prophet, as we said, is the Pope, which is headquartered in Rome. You'll notice that I've got a little red box on this chart as well here. And we studied the apocalypse some years ago in Orlando. And one of the things that we realized was that in this chart of Bartholomew from the grand structure of the apocalypse, and his charts are, I believe, very well done. But this happens to be an error, and Brother Mack pointed this out to me yesterday, that it was on the chart. And it's showing the eighth head as forming during the beast of the sea phase, which is not correct. It comes later, of course. We know that the seventh head is destroyed during this time frame, but because of the influence, continuing influence and agitation of the barbarian kingdoms, the papacy does not enjoy this blessing of independence until, for them, a blessing of independence, until the beast of the earth phase. But I'd like to read from Eureka. This is volume 4 of the Logos edition concerning this. And this is what Brother Thomas has to say, and it will kind of clear this up for us, I believe. The sixth and seventh heads, which hindered the manifestation of the name of blasphemy upon the seven hills, being taken out of the way, scope now was afforded for its development in the eighth head of the beast. From the epoch of the settlement of Italy, AD 554 to 559, and during the ensuing 240 years of Rome's eclipse, the greatest or most influential subject in the degraded city was the Pope. There was no constitutional superior therein to overawe or keep him down. In the times of the seventh head, which was Arian, he was in great trouble, and especially during the Gothic War. Indeed, he has always fallen upon troublous times when he has had for ruler or neighbor an independent king of Italy. It is so at this day. A king of Italy, naturally enough, claims Rome for the capital of his kingdom, which is incompatible with the sovereignty and independence of the name of blasphemy upon the seven hills. Brother Lou gave us a very good definition of what blaspheme means this morning. Having then put the reader in possession of so much of history as will enable him to identify the seventh head, which was under Theodoric, or was the Gothic, ultimately it was destroyed during this time frame, and having brought him down to the epoch of its decollation or destruction, which was necessary for the subsequent healing of the wounded sixth head of Rome's imperialism, it behooves us to pause in our exposition that we may bring up arrears in regard to the development of the name of blasphemy upon the heads. When this is sufficiently advanced, we shall have brought the ecclesiastical in line with the civil, and be prepared to carry them on together until the healing process is completed in their expansion into the eighth head upon the seven hills, as symbolized in this 13th chapter by the beast of the earth with two horns like a lamb and speaking as a dragon. And that's when we will truly see the beginning of the eighth head, and of course it will continue to manifest itself, and we'll discuss it relative to the scarlet-colored beast as well. And it's also on this chart as well. You'll see there is an error here, but otherwise the charts are very well done and laid out quite well, I believe. Here's a summary of the beasts of the apocalypse before we get into the beast of the sea today. We'll see Daniel 7 and the fourth beast. Of course, Revelation 12:3, the great red dragon. Revelation 13:1-10, which we're going to consider today, and hopefully get into the beast of the earth as well, which is in Revelation 13:11-18. And then lastly, the scarlet-colored beast in Revelation 17. You can see the heads, the horns, and the general identification. Here we have a map showing where these arose, and once again, are they separate entities, or are they one entity in different phases and different aspects? Indeed, the latter of that is correct. They are different phases of the same system. Generally speaking, it is the kingdom of men manifested ecclesiastically and militarily or politically. Now, what we're going to be talking about today are these two, we hope, but certainly the beast of the sea. And what sea is it talking about? The Mediterranean Sea, exactly. And here we have a comparison of Daniel 2 and Daniel 7 with the beast of the sea. Notice the parallels. Notice the similarities. And why is that the case? because they're talking about, and they are representative of, the same entity. I'm going to leave this up as we talk this morning. Turn with me, please, to Revelation, the 13th chapter. And I'd like to take the time to read these first 10 verses together. And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea. And once again, envision this in your mind's eye. And let's try to see what the apostle saw here. Having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. And I saw one of the heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And the time frames, as we come across them in the apocalypse, are very significant, and they're expressed oftentimes in different ways, even though it may indeed be this 1260 period consistently. We'll see different starting dates and different ending dates representative of a historical time frame that the Lord is disclosing to us and revealing to us certain matters about. For example, in Revelation 12:6, and I'll pick back up here in a moment, you'll remember it talks about 1,260 years. And this would have been from, in Revelation 12:6, from AD 312 to 1572, which was the massacre of St. Bartholomew, in which 70,000 Protestants, and probably incorporated some true believers as well, lost their lives. In Revelation 13:5, here we've just read of these 42 months, and as we'll see, this is probably best dated from the time of Justinian's decree in AD 533 to 1793, 1795, which is the period of the French Revolution and of course, Napoleon's rise to power. We can also date that 42 months from 606 to 610, which was the decree of Phocas, which really finalized the fact that the Bishop of Rome was now indeed the Pope. And that leads us up to 1866, 1870, and we know that in 1870 the papacy lost his temporal power. So these dates, again, are quite significant, these time frames, but when they are expressed in different terms, it does help us to realize that there is probably a different starting date, different beginning, and a different ending time frame. So we should look for that. Going back to the reading here, in verse 6, And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And isn't it interesting, as Brother Lou shared this morning from Jude, in the 10th verse, it refers to those individuals that were indeed blaspheming as what? As brute beasts. So here we see the parallel with these wild beasts that we're talking about in this context. His name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations, and all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. And as we look at the scope of Catholicism across the world, it's truly astounding, isn't it? You know, the volume, the scope, the influence that Catholicism has throughout the earth. And if any man have an ear, let him hear. And, of course, this is very similar to the phrasing that we see in relation to the letters to the ecclesias in Revelation 2 and 3. If any man have an ear, let him hear, let him hearken, let him take to heart these things. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. We've already been introduced in Revelation 11:7 to this beast, where it is said to ascend out of the abyss. And it is Daniel's fourth beast in its later phases. It's also identified with the dragon, Revelation 12:3-17. And by its features, its works, and it likewise it's associated with Revelation 17 and verses 3 and 8, as we'll see particularly when we get there. So John, like Daniel, saw four beasts arise out of the sea, or a beast that had these aspects of the four beasts. The term beast here, as we said earlier, is Therion, which is a wild beast, in contrast to Zoan, or the living ones of the apocalypse, a picture of the redeemed. John saw a wild beast arise out of the sea, which is emblematic of the nations. And we've already seen that from many of the references. We have many others we could consider. But indeed, it is emblematic of the nations. We're told it has seven heads, which is representative, once again, of the forms of government, which we've already discussed, and ten horns, and horn signifies power, as we well know. And it is the same as the ten toes of Nebuchadnezzar's image in Daniel 2. The ten horns, or the ten horns of the wild beast seen by Daniel in the seventh chapter in verse 7. And it's referring to individual nations, as we'll see. The Roman Empire became divided into ten parts by the barbarian tribes who invaded. Brother Thomas delineates them as the Huns, the Vandals, the Visigoths, the Burgundians, the Gepidi, the Lombards, the Franks, the Suevi, the Alans, and the Bavarians. And I think that's a pretty accurate rendering of them. And there are ten. Now, we know that these correspond, we believe, in this latter time, with the nations that comprise the European Union. And how many are in the European Union at this point in time? Well, 27, possibly 28, some are pending, not 10. So we can say that perhaps this 10 is emblematic of a complete number. It seems unlikely that there would be a reduction, because we know Britain will not be in that group. But to get to 10, it's hard to see that happening. Now, you have seen the image drawn in some very unusual ways, but I don't think it would be quite accurate if we had 27 or 28 toes on the image. So, indeed, it may represent a complete number here. The ten crowns, interestingly, are upon the horns, and these powers are the barbarian tribes, and of course, this signifies, again, that the barbarians still had some control within the empire. And this is why we do not see the full development of the eighth head on the part of the pope or the papacy until a later time frame, because of that continuing agitation and influence. These were indeed diadems, so it designated independent power or independent authority. The dragon, showing the prophecy fulfilled before the nations, is represented by the horns, and of course they had independence. Crowns on the horns shows at the time of the prophecy the empire was divided into these ten independent nations. And upon his heads the name of blasphemy. This is the heads of the wild beast, and it's referring to the central government of Rome. At this point, we should clarify the distinction between the beast of this chapter and the dragon of Revelation 12. They are both portrayed as having seven heads and ten horns, but though reference is still made to the dragon, it isn't any longer described in this manner. The reason for this is because the dragon was stripped of the power represented by these symbols, while another beast in the west rose to manifest it. When Constantine established his capital in Constantinople, the mouth of the dragon, as we read in Revelation 16:13, was set up there. And though he rules as sole ruler over a united empire, it became divided into two, a military center in Constantinople and a religious center, as we've already discussed, in Rome. With the barbarians' impact, the military power of Constantinople diminished, and the dragon lost its power over the horns. The result was another papal wild beast arising in the west, and upon that beast was found the names of blasphemy, referring to the doctrines, the practices, and the titles of Rome. Blasphemy is professing to be something that one is not, is another definition. And indeed, this is exactly what Rome was trying to do. We see the characteristic of the Pope. And look at verse 2 of Revelation 13. Once again, the beast that John saw was like a leopard. It had the feet of a bear, and his mouth was as the mouth of a lion. Daniel saw as well a leopard, a bear, and a lion, which contributed to the development of the fourth beast, which Daniel didn't name, as we'll remember. The fourth beast, and interestingly, each ate the other, was a combination of beasts that came before. And that unnamed beast of Revelation is very similar and is fulfilled in the papacy. Now, once again, you know, keep in mind that these are not independent entities, but different aspects of each. When we talk about such things as Nebuchadnezzar's image, and we mention the fact that that image must stand in these last days, and soon it will, for its first and its last time, we might say, well, what's the need for the image to be fully intact? There's no longer a nation of Babylon. The Medo-Persians aren't around anymore, nor the Greeks as such. But they are, as those qualities and characteristics, the very geographies, are embodied in these entities that we're discussing now, meaning the dragon and the false and the beast system and the false prophet. The leopard, the bear, the lion, the dragon represent the kingdom of men as described in Daniel 7. In the exposition of Daniel, Brother Thomas had this to say: it will be seen that the kingdom of men has been diversified in its constitution, extent, and throne since the foundation by Nimrod to the present time. It has nevertheless been the same Nimrodian kingdom. It has nevertheless been the same Nimrodian kingdom with Babylon and Assyria for characteristics. Rome combined the viciousness of the nations that came before it. The leopard was noted for its speed, for its ferocity, and the cruelty with which it killed its prey. The bear was known for strength in its feet and in its claws. It's interesting, too, that the bear is an omnivore, which denotes a certain unpredictability. Are they going to eat meat, or are they going to eat berries? And we can see how the very actions and activities of the Russian bear today is just as unpredictable. And we will see aggression, and yet we will see the attempt for diplomacy. An interesting time frame. The lion mouth is for power to bite and to devour, to hold its prey as well. There's a piece in the Bible magazine from January of this year. I'd like to share that with you because it relates what we're reading here to our times. It's entitled Out of the Mouth. It is with considerable skill that the Vatican has harnessed the world's media in its efforts to create a unitary mind. Several encyclicals were issued which drew the attention of Catholics to the importance of the subject. For example, the Decree on the Media of Social Communications, 1963. In 71 came Mass Media, the Pastoral Instruction, as well as World Communication Day, held annually, and Catholics were told, parents, educators, priests, and Christian organizations should encourage young people with the right qualities to take up a career in social communication. Broadcasters have access to the minds and hearts of everyone, television especially. This was an actual quote. They have the hearts and the minds of people available to them. The mark of the beast. So today, Roman Catholics are to be found in key positions in the media and at the head of organizations such as the BBC. Editors of leading newspapers and magazines, publishers and distribution networks, almost all have been brought under the control of Catholics, giving them an influence that is far out of proportion to their numbers. In addition to the mass media, there is an oppressive influence in education, all aimed at promoting the social teaching of the Church and contributing to the formation of public opinion and hence to that one mind which is, indeed, the mark of the beast. And isn't it interesting to see the change in regard for the Catholic system compared to what even some of us experienced in our youth? I can remember that Catholicism was truly anathema. You didn't associate with Catholics. Protestants certainly didn't. Are we seeing that today? No, we're seeing that universality that is characteristic of Catholicism come to the forefront. Rome dominated the West by religion. It had lost its military power. All the individual nationalities within its borders, within the borders of Rome, converted to Christianity and supported, interestingly, the Bishop of Rome, which we know became Pope. The empire, though united at one point, was divided now into a religious and military power. Once again, religious power in Rome, the military in Constantinople. And the dragon gave him his power. The papacy was fully supported by the dragon in Constantinople. The armies there were used to enforce the influence and the status of the form of government in Rome, which was becoming more and more papal in character. The word power here is in the Greek dunamin, D-U-N-A-M-I-N, and it denotes the ability to perform things, in contrast to the authority to do it. And that's mentioned several times in this 13th chapter, verses 4, 5, 7, 12, 14, and 15. The seat, of course, denotes the throne, the government or rule. Both emperor and the Church of Rome received support from the emperor in Constantinople. They were given authority, or exousia in the Greek, and it was all from the emperor in Constantinople. Note verse 3 of this 13th chapter. And I saw one of the heads, and the Greek here leaves out, I saw, wasn't a new vision. There were seven heads representing different forms of government by which Rome was ruled. We've mentioned these yesterday, such as the regal, the consular, the dictatorial, and so forth. In B.C. 31, the imperial, and from 476 A.D., Gothic. The sixth or imperial head was wounded unto death by the Goths, specifically Theodoric. He conquered Italy and established this form of government in Rome. The imperial head was eventually restored in a new form, and we see that in the Beast of the Sea phase. Theodoric, king of the Ostrogoths, established, as we said, the Gothic rule in Italy, forming this seventh head of the beast. It was endorsed by the emperor in Constantinople and had all the external forms of a Roman emperor. Theodoric retained the Roman laws and administration, but it was classified as Gothic. The Goths, though Christian, were opposed to the Catholics, interestingly. The church suffered, and it appealed to the emperor in Constantinople. And Justinian, who was the emperor of Constantinople at that time, through his general, Belisarius, overthrows the Goths. The imperial head is revived in time in a new form, becoming, as we said, the eighth head of the beast of the earth, which is the papacy. All the world wondered after the beast. And the revised for world here is earth, which I think is appropriate. And wondered is, in the Greek, thaumazo, thaumazo, which means to wonder with admiration, to follow after, to admire. The sixth head, the papal imperial head, its development and its success had brought millions of admirers to its feet. Verse 4, Revelation 13. And they worshipped the dragon. The rise of the papacy in the West was a result of the support of the emperors in Constantinople. And this was true specifically with, as we just mentioned, Justinian, who issued the decree proclaiming the Bishop of Rome to be the universal bishop of the church, or the Pope. The papal influence was growing. And they worshiped the beast. The beast referring to the Roman Empire. And a new power arose in time known as the Holy or the Papal Roman Empire in the form of the Beast of the Sea. They sought religious unity amongst nations, bringing Christendom, what we know as Christendom, into existence, which was really begun, in essence, in its rudimentary form by Constantine, saying, "Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" And this is a parody on similar ascriptions that are used of God. And it suggests suggests that the beast is taking these attributes onto itself, as indeed it was at this point in time. And we have several references. We'll only look at a couple. Let's go to Psalm 113. Psalm 113 and verse 5. Who is like unto the Lord our God, who dwelleth on high? Again, very similar wording being used of this wicked system. They are taking on and claiming to be, you know, God's designee upon the earth. Look at Jeremiah 49 and 19. Behold, he shall come up like a lion from the swelling of Jordan against the habitation of the strong. But I will suddenly make him run away from her, and who is a chosen man that I may appoint over her? For who is like me, and who will appoint me the time, and who is that shepherd that will stand before me? Again, very similar wording to what we see used in relation to the papacy and the Romish system here. Very inappropriate. The Pope claimed to be God's representative on earth and continues to do so. We read in verse 5 of Revelation 13, and there was given unto him a mouth, that very mouth that we've already alluded to. Rome became the mouth of the beast, from which came papal decrees supported by the military power of Constantinople. They were speaking great things and blasphemies. and power was given unto him. Delegated authority from Constantinople. Brother Thomas called it, appropriately, a license to practice. They were to continue in that they might make war upon the religious bodies of that time that were taking exception to Catholicism, and this would have incorporated as well the true believer, as we see from some of the other verses we read here. To make war of a religious nature that sought the submission of the two witnesses, the earth and the woman, religious and political opposition to Catholicism. The warfare is symbolized in Revelation 11, 4 through 6, and it's predicted in Daniel 10, 1. The 40 and 2 months is 1,260 years. As we said, this is probably from Justinian's decree in support of the papacy to the time of the French Revolution. Or, dating that from Phocas, it leads us up to the loss of the temporal power of the papacy in 1870. We read in verse 6, and he opened his mouth, characteristic of Rome. And let's go back to Revelation 13, if you're not there, and look at verse 6 again. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and them that dwell in heaven. As we said, very much characteristic of Rome. To blaspheme his name. This was, as we know, a great church controversy during the 5th century. And I think Brother Kyle alluded to this, over the Trinitarianism versus Arianism. And ultimately, we know that with the military support of Constantinople, which was very timely, Trinitarianism won out. Mentions that the blaspheming was also against the tabernacle of the Lord, Yahweh's dwelling place, as well as the Lord's followers. Just one reference or two here. Let's look at 2 Corinthians, the 6th chapter. 2 Corinthians 6. And 16. In what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God, as God has said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Indeed, what a contrast between the true believer and this Romish system at this time. They were blaspheming this tabernacle, which is characteristic of us, as we have been embodied, you know, with the teachings of our Lord. And they that dwell are them that dwell in the heaven. And these are the heavenlies in Christ. Look at Ephesians, the 1st chapter. Here again we have many references along these lines, but I think a couple will suffice. Ephesians 1 and 3. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who hath blessed us with all spiritual blessings in heavenly places in Christ. And that is our dwelling, in the sense of being in the heavenlies, in the sense of covenant relationship. We read in verse 7, and it was given unto him, that is, power from the dragon, provided all of this capability to make war with the saints. The papacy was given the power to persecute those who held the truth or were in any way opposed to the system. We see in Revelation 7 the slaying of the two witnesses. It speaks also of overcoming them, and the term is nileo, N-I-L-A-O, which means to vanquish and to utterly prevail over. Look at the prophecy of Daniel 7:25. Daniel 7:25. And he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given unto his hand until a time and times and the dividing of time. There will be a temporary victory of the papacy, but we know that ultimately it will be destroyed at the hand of Christ and the saints. And power, or exousia, as we discussed earlier, was given delegated authority over all kindreds and tongues and nations. And this occurs seven times, telling us that in the apocalypse it occurs seven times, illustrating, you know, this aspect of control. And we read in verse 8, "And all them that dwell on the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life." So, obviously, if we are worshiping this system of error, we cannot have our name written in the book of life, nor did these individuals, of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world, the book of life from the beginning. We have many references to that. The Lord, Lamb typically was slain when the coats of skins were provided for Adam and Eve in the garden. And we read in verse 9, "If any man have an ear, let him hear." The Lord is instructing us to separate ourselves from the harlot, from Rome, and her harlot daughters. Look at Revelation 3:22. "He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the ecclesias." He ends that chapter with that wording to drive home the point that we must not only hear it literally, but we must hearken to it. We must apply it. We're told in verse 10 that he that leadeth into captivity, the dragon and the beast, will go into captivity as well. They have, throughout the ages, led multitudes into captivity, literally because of the opposition to the Catholic position. But also, they have made multitudes captive of their doctrines and their indoctrination and teachings, as we read in Revelation 17. They have destroyed many with the sword, and they likewise will be taken captive and will be killed with the sword. Look at 2 Thessalonians with me, the second chapter. Second Thessalonians 2 and verse 8. "And then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming." And look at Revelation 19. Verses 20 and 21. "And the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that wrought miracles before him, with which he deceived them that had received the mark of the beast, and them that worshipped his image. These both were cast alive into a lake of fire, burning with brimstone." And we're very familiar with Psalm 149 and the fact that the saints will participate in the destruction of this wicked system. We've only got a minute or so here, and I was hoping we'd get into the beast of the earth, but it lets it at least set the stage for it. I'd like to read an excerpt from the 13 lectures by Brother Robert Roberts. And I would ask you also to read the rest of this 13th chapter, because we won't have time to read that in class tomorrow. "John beheld another beast come up, not out of the sea, but out of the earth. This is another form of the papal beast, and that is proved by the statement in verse 12 that he causeth them that dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. You may ask, why should there be another form of the papal beast? Because in the progress of events, the papal ascendancy took on an entirely new phase. the Constantinopolitan dragon of the East, who in the first place gave him his authority, finally became of no account. And from the interior regions of Europe, there now sprang up a new conquering power which obtained the controlling ascendancy in Europe and incorporated the papacy itself in a new order of things. This was the Germanic Empire, springing out of the order of things established by the victories of Charlemagne, king of the French, the emperor of the Romans. And we know that the Pope first appealed to his father, Pepin, and was given assistance, but it matured in Charles the Great or in Charlemagne. Let anyone read the history of the Germanic Empire, which slowly and peacefully shifted from France to Germany and finally to Austria as the leading German power. And brothers and sisters, isn't it exciting as we look at these historical events, we see how they are so perfectly aligned with what's revealed to us in the Apocalypse. Once again, no gaps, no disorder, no confusion. They will find that it had two horns, or was constituted of two contemporary dynasties, that is, the emperor and the pope. These were the two leading figures of the empire, to which the rest of Europe was subject. The pope held his position subject to the confirmation of the emperor, and the emperor did not hold a valid position until he received his crown at the hands of the pope. And I actually got to see some of those crowns on display in Austria. Quite fascinating. It was a dual empire, a two-horned beast. They were lamb-like horns, that is, by profession, they belonged to Christ. Between them, they were Christendom. But the beast spoke like a dragon for all that. In nature and principles, it was thoroughly dragonic, though ostensibly holding a lamb-like character. Let anyone study the deeds of the Pope and Emperor, and they will see the truth of this symbolism. No more merciless tyranny over afflicted earth than that which, under the name of the Holy Roman Empire, caused the tears and blood of thousands to flow in dire persecution and oppression under a pretext of authority from Christ. Thank you.